following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wake up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now, let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, episode number 150. Hit another milestone. I guess everyone's a milestone if you really think about it. But at the end of the day, 150 is a nice round number. You like to get to those.
There is a phrase that the guy that got me into radio back in my hometown of Cumberland, Maryland, always used to say, regardless of what the broadcast was, he would always say, another testimony to radio greatness. And I say, what the hell does that mean? He said, we got on the air. So it was
that's
simple.
Fantastic.
That's what he would.
All right, I'm going to start using that one.
Because he would have a notebook in front of him. He would close it. He would say the same thing after every broadcast. And he turned to me because he knew I knew what he was going to say. And I knew what he was going to say. But he turned to me and said, which means we got on the air. Heard 200-300 times, but I've never forgot
that's
that.
That's fantastic. We've got a busy show today. Got a couple of guests coming on. Marty Fisher from the Georgia Southern Clay Target Shooting Team going to be coming on in just a few moments. We got Barry McKnight, the voice of the Trojans. That's always one of our favorites to have on throughout the year.
For sure.
He's going to help us preview Georgia Southern and Troy coming up this Saturday from Veterans Memorial Stadium. But before we get to everything, got to get to Marty Fisher with the Georgia Southern Clay Shooting Team. Marty, appreciate you joining us.
Colin, it's a pleasure being here. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about the team.
Now, it's a team that isn't under the Georgia Southern Athletics umbrella. It's a club team here at Georgia Southern. Talk about the start that you guys had and what it's been to get to what you are now.
Well, it's really funny, and it's a great story. I mean, I'll be honest with you. We I was at Far City Gun Club. There was the independent school, state high school clay target championship was going on at Far City Gun Club. They were 500-600 kids there competing from all over the state of Georgia. And a couple of the parents, we were just talking, and they knew me, knew my background. I've been in the shooting business for decades. And they said, Marty, why does Georgia Southern not have a competition clay target team? And they asked me that question. Because there was a coach from Alabama walking around talking to people. There was a coach from Clemson walking around talking to kids there. There were coach from Jacksonville University, which it is a, if you will, varsity team at Jacksonville. And I said, I don't know, but I'll find out. So I arranged to meet at the time Tom Kleinlein. You know, I came over and talked to Tom, and he says, Marty, it doesn't really fall under what we're doing. It's under club sports, but I'll support you any way that I can. Spoke to Dr. Marrero, I'll support you any way that I can. So, and then I came over and met with the guys in club sports, and I said, here's a vision. Here's something that we can do. The best high school shooting in the nation is in the state of Georgia. Now, you want to talk about a recruiting hotbed. We talk all the time about getting 5 stars out of Georgia for football and in different sports. I'm going to tell you something. This state is full of 5-star young shooters. And so, and we had, one young man that you guys are familiar with, Douglas Williams.
Douglas,
what a great kid. And Douglas, is an avid clay target shooter. His entire family is that way. And his dad was one of the people that mentioned this to me. Why not Georgia Southern? So, I got with Douglas. I got with the then president of the shotgun team. They had a club team that didn't compete, didn't do any competitions. I mean, for all I know, they'd go out and, shoot 50 targets and go have a beer. I don't really know what they did. I really don't know. But we presented a little vision of how to make this thing take off. And guys, this is the business that I'm in. Now, you know, I am a volunteer coach. I don't get compensated for my time, and that's fine. But it's something that I can do to give back to the university. I know that we can have a great program here. And in year one, we sure did. You know, we were able to get some kids. I ran around, you know, they gave me the reins and said, okay, be the coach. So I ran around and recruited some kids that they were deciding where they wanted to go. They wanted to come to Georgia Southern anyway. So, and they're all on the Hope Scholarship. I mean, every kid we've got on the team is on the Hope. So, you know, they do have a scholarship, you know, that they've earned. And so we picked kids off of these very best high school teams in Georgia and said, would you like to come be a part of a program that we're going to build with two goals? The first one, give you a great education. And the second one is to be a national champion. And that's what we took this thing to people with. And fortunately, we got some young student athletes that wanted to be a part of that. We entered, the ACUI is the sanctioning body for Clay Target. NCAA does rifle, ACUI does shotgun. And the reason for that, 50 plus years ago, NCAA went to the NRA and said, we want to sanction shooting. What would you do? Well, at that time, there was no sporting clays. There weren't that many disciplines for clay targets. So the NRA says, we'll do rifle. When ACUI jumped in and says, well, we'll do shotgun. So now we're getting ready to go in March 22. We'll be going to the 53rd Collegiate Clay Target Championship. You know, and we went to the 52nd one this past year, but we had some success. We with COVID, they made everybody shoot virtual for a while, so they had a virtual national championship where you'd go, you know, whenever you have referees, but you had to send your scores in. It wasn't face to face, so the team participated in that and ran right away. We 23 different colleges entered in October when they had one of these things. And of all things, we shot in the skeet competition, and Georgia Southern won its first national championship, you know, right out of the box, immediately. And the next event that we went to was the collegiate championship. Well, they put you in Division IV to start with. They have four divisions. At the nationals, the divisions are based solely on how many shooters did your school enter in the competition. They could care less how big your school is. Some of the very smallest schools are the very best at clay target shooting. Lindenwood University, for instance, in St. Louis. Most people have never heard of Lindenwood. Lindenwood won 15 of the last 16 national championships.
Good grief.
They have 75 kids in their program. They take 40 kids to the national championship. The way that works is they take the top five scores. We took 10. And so they have a lot more chances. And so we get to the nationals, and of all things, one of our top shooters, Tate Skipper from Macon, the week before the nationals, flipped a dirt bike, broke his collarbone. So he's got four screws and a plate from surgery like 5 days before the shoot. He can't even lift his left arm. So he says, you know, and I checked with his parents, and he said, I'm going. And I said, well, no, wait a minute. So we had to check with the doctor, check with the parents, all of that, you know. And he says, look, I've prepared for this my entire life. I'm going. And, you know, to his credit, I mean, he literally shot one-handed.
Jeez.
Shot 95 out of 100 in skeet, 85 in the super sporting clays. I mean, one-handed. And, you know, we didn't get to use his score much, obviously, because, you know, our guys that didn't have broken collarbones, you know, and two arms shot better. But we were lucky. We won the super sporting in our division. We won the sporting clays in our division. And then we won the high overall team national championship for that division. And what's crazy is the next division higher, which is a 10-person division, there's a school, Hillsdale College from Michigan. They just built a privately funded $4 million shooting facility. They are now the Olympic training ground for the United States Olympic team on their college facility. They've won the national championship in that division, that where it's the 10-person division, seven times. First time Georgia Southern went, we beat them too.
I think about those conversations that you had with Tom Kleinlein and Dr. Kyle Morero about just getting it off the ground, and you just spoke about becoming a national champion. That's quite a journey.
It's Danny. It's a huge journey, and it's all on the kids. I mean, each and every one of those young student athletes, they know they've got to make their grades, but each and every one of them, when we sat down and talked with them, I said, "What are your goals?" Says, "We want to win." And the beauty of it is, all of these kids come from these very successful clay target programs.
Sure.
They know how to win. They know what it's like to be a state champion. They know. They've competed in a scholastic clay target program. Half of them have national scholastic clay target program championships. When they go to Marengo, Ohio, and there are 3,000 shooters there. I mean, one young man that is shooting with us this year, Ross Wilson from Buford, Georgia, won that event, the high overall individual, 2 years in a row. 3,000 shooters from all over America.
Wow.
And this kid won it two straight years. No, that's never been done. Shot the highest cumulative score in the history of the event this year, 594 out of 600 targets. And so we're able to recruit kids that want a good education. They know Georgia Southern. Having the program gives them a reason to come here. I mean, most of these kids had academic scholarship offers from different schools, Alabama being one of them. Quite a few of these kids, Alabama was begging these kids to come shoot there.
I remember you telling me about that during the summer. We last saw each other at the Savannah luncheon, and a lot of times it seems that you're going up against Alabama. I think you mentioned Clemson as well, about places you're trying to pull kids away from.
And if you remember, Danny, I said we were going to the Junior United States Open Sporting Clays Championship that weekend. I mean, you spoke on a Thursday.
That's right.
We were leaving on Friday to go to that event.
Yeah.
You know what?
And you had that hat with you.
Yes, I did.
You had that hat with you.
And you know what? We won that event, too. And we beat Clemson. We beat Alabama. We beat Lindenwood. We beat Jacksonville. These kids are remarkable. I mean, and it's really them. Everybody looks at me and says, well, they must have a great coach. I said, no. I'm a really good recruiter. I know talent when I see it. But these kids really know how to shoot. I mean, yes, we do little tweaks. But, you know, they show up being able to shoot 95 to 98 to 100 out of 100. I mean, it's hard to find that. And so many, there are more than 150 college clay target teams that are competitive in this country. I would say probably about 60 of them are really serious about it. Some of them are full scholarship programs for shooting. Quite a few of them are. Like us, many of them are club. Some of the club programs have been around for a long time. They're well funded. And, you know, that's where we are. You know, we have to self-fund at this particular time, and that's fine. And the kids work really hard. I mean, we're doing some things. We've got a big clay target event this weekend. That's a fundraising event for us to raise money to go to the regional championship in Nashville coming up in November. We've got another regional that will be in Savannah. I mean, people can actually come watch that event. Then we go to the national championship again in San Antonio. And, you know, when you start taking 10, 12, 13 kids, putting them on airplanes, you know, rental cars, entry fees, I mean, all of those things, it's lots of thousands of dollars. And, you know, we take as many kids to that event, quite frankly, as we can afford to take. And so, you know, hopefully we'll be able to take everybody on the team, and, you know, the fundraising will allow that to happen.
And that's part of the thing that I wanted to get into with you, kind of the nitty-gritty of, with it being a club sport, you have to fund everything. You guys do all of your fundraising. Everything that you guys are able to do is because of what you do to make that possible.
Correct.
That You've got correct. A big event coming up this weekend, as you mentioned. But what all goes into what these guys put into this program as far as going out fundraising? But also, while you're doing that, going to school, you're also going to practice. You're going to a lot of different things and having to spread yourself a little bit out.
Well, and I'll be honest with you, the competitive side of this, and we have a shotgun club. I mean, anybody that wants to be a part of the shotgun club through club sports and recreation at Georgia Southern can certainly do that. And we've had it was a very small club for a long time. Well, all of a sudden now the word's out, we've won a little bit, so now everybody wants to be a part of the shotgun program. I mean, Douglas told me, I said, Marty, we've got 25, 30 people that all of a sudden hit me about coming and being a part of the shotgun program, which is fabulous. But the competition side is a little bit different. And you're right, we treat it very much like we treat the football program, the basketball. They've got to come to practice. Because if you don't practice, you can't win. I mean, you have to come to practice. First and foremost, they're a student first. That's job one. And practice is two. And all of them know that they have to be involved in the fundraising efforts. And so, we're giving away a really cool custom golf cart. We did this last year, and sold almost $20,000 worth of raffle tickets on this golf cart. And, awesome. It looks like we'll do that again this year. That's because great. It's been really hot. But, we give every person on the team, they have an allotment of tickets. And we said, look, don't bring back tickets, bring money. And so they know, and to their credit, they've all done it. And it's a big part of the whole process. And the beauty of it is all of these kids know each other. They're all from Georgia. They've all competed against each other for a long time. And what I've told them, I sit down with the parents, I talk to the parents and tell them this is a little different than a normal club program. We're going to have demands placed on your son or your daughter, because it is co-ed. I mean, we have ladies and we have guys. And, they know up front, this is a little different from the regular club deal. And they are willing to make that commitment. And that's what drives everybody to be successful, is each and every one of those kids has a burning desire to put the national championship ring on their fingers.
Again, this Friday, you've got the second annual Eagle Clay Day down at the Four City Gun Club in Savannah. Registration will start at 11:30 a.m. Clay shooting begins at 1 o'clock. You've got, I love the wording on it, you've got meal, awards, after party, raffles, and auction start at 4:30. I don't know what much else you could want.
No, it is a great day. It's a lot of fun. We had one last year. The entry this year is significantly higher already. Eagle Nation is turning out. It's a lot of fun. The targets, you pay one entry fee, the targets are included, the ammo is included, the meal. We've got a remarkable, meal for everybody when it's all said and done. Well, we'll hand out some awards to the top teams, and it's a four-person team, or individuals can shoot. And realistically, what you're doing is you get a chance to interface with the shooters on the team. They're all going to be there. Get a chance to know those kids and talk to them a little bit and see. And I will tell you, this entire program, they are great representatives of this university. They put themselves into the public in a very, very professional way. And they understand that they're not just representing themselves and their family, they're also representing Georgia Southern University.
I think if we were to enter this, we would have to have Doug on our team and only take one score.
I'd be fine with that.
That would help.
Like best ball, take best shot.
Yeah, can we do that? Can you do take best shot and it's going to be Doug's?
See,
I can promise you that.
Here's the deal. We're actually going to do a little auction for, we have four masterclass shooters on the team. Okay, we're going to auction each one of those guys off, and whoever on the team that gets them has the lowest score, their score replaces that low school.
Ooh, we need a lot of money on that because we might need all four.
So we're trying to help all of the team out, and these guys are, I mean, they're going to shoot remarkable scores. I mean, it's just it's fun to, people say, well, is shooting is it a spectator sport? Well, in reality, it's more of a participation sport, to be honest with you. But if you watch somebody that is really good, it's like watching somebody that is just has the best golf swing in the world and say, God, boy, I wish I could do that. And you just don't really understand how many tens of thousands of rounds of ammunition those guys have shot and all of the practice time and perfecting that move, the economy of motion and all of the things that it takes. And that's really what separates the great from the trying to be great. And we're fortunate that the state of Georgia has a lot of kids that fall into that great category. And I think you'll see that, as long as we have this team, and I think it's going to be for a long, long time, because, the shooters in Georgia is the fastest growing scholastic sport and college sport in the nation is clay target shooting, as strange as that may seem. And I'll give you just one more tidbit, because you guys are gonna you're gonna drop your microphone. State of Minnesota. Okay. Minnesota. All right, it gets cold up there. There are more high school kids in the state of Minnesota that are on varsity clay target programs in high school than play football in that entire state.
I would have never known that.
Huh.
The largest clay target event in the world is the Minnesota State High School Trap Shoot. 9 days, 8,000 shooters.
Good night.
That is mind-boggling, but it's reality. And we have the same scenario. In Georgia, we don't do as much trap. Most of our shooting here is sporting clays. But if you go to any of those events with those kids, it could go over 1,000. I mean, they're in 4-H shooting nationwide. There are 600,000 kids involved in the 4-H shooting program.
Holy cow.
Around the country. It's here. And here's the beauty, guys. In all of that, the millions and millions of rounds of ammunition, not a single accident. The safest of all sports.
Before we let you go, what's the best way for people to get involved with this clay target shooting team? I know you've got your event coming up on Friday. How do people get involved? How do people buy raffle tickets so they don't have to bring any of the tickets back to you?
We only printed 300 raffle tickets. Okay, now it's not an inexpensive buy-in. It's $100 a ticket, but it's a $10,000 golf cart.
Yeah. Right.
And you've got a really good, I mean, one in 300, I mean, I...
That's a pretty good return. I'll take the chances.
Pretty good return, yeah. Okay? you can get that through Venmo. Douglas is the team captain, and he has a Venmo account that's actually the team account, and it is Douglas-Williams-63. Venmo.com. Anybody that has a Venmo account can go right in there. If you do that on Venmo, please do this for us. We've had a couple that didn't. We're having to run them down. There's a little thing that says notes. Please put your phone number. I mean, if we happen to draw your name, it would be nice to be able to call you immediately on Friday afternoon and say, by the way, you won the golf cart.
It's yours.
It's yours. So,
there you go.
There's one other way, and through the Georgia Southern Foundation. Almost all of the clubs and various organizations have ways to contribute through the foundation. So it's georgiasouthern.edu/gift. Okay. And you go in and you get the home page and you look down and it says designate my gift. Click on that and there'll be a little scroll part down at the bottom of the page. Just scroll through there till it says clay target team. Click on that and they'll give you some options that you can do to make a tax deductible donation to the clay target team.
Awesome.
And I can assure you every dime will be spent in the direction of a national championship. That I can promise.
It's been a lot of fun to kind of follow you guys' journey the last year, 2 years, especially through Doug, whenever he was getting so excited about talking about it around baseball. Doug Williams, for those that don't know, the bullpen catcher for Georgia Southern Baseball. We've talked about him plenty on the broadcast of baseball and on here, but really appreciate you stopping by, one, but also really appreciate what you and this team are doing to help get the brand of Georgia Southern out there and continue the legacy that is Georgia Southern.
Well, and the beauty of it, guys, is we're getting the legacy and the brand of Georgia Southern in a place that probably is not getting it otherwise. And, you know, these kids around the country, I mean, all of a sudden now I'm getting emails from California, I'm getting emails from Texas, from Indiana, from Tennessee, from South Carolina, kids wanting to come shoot for Georgia Southern. Now they're going to have to come and qualify for an academic scholarship, you know, which, you know, we do have, you know, the school does have. And down the road, who knows? But, you know, right now we are a club team, and with the Hope Scholarship, we can really bring in the great kids that qualify for the Hope and are really, really good in shooting. And one thing, I brought hats. You guys have the opportunity to get
presents.
Any Georgia Southern hat in the world, but this one, okay, because these are pretty special. This is the official team cap that we wear in all of our competitions.
That's awesome.
Everyone that comes to the event on Friday will get a hat. So from the Georgia Southern Clay Target team.
That is fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
And one last thing for folks that want to know how to follow the team, facebook.com/SouthernClayTargetTeam. That's our team page. And, you know, please come on board. Enjoy what you see there, and feel free to share.
That is fantastic. Absolutely appreciate it, Marty.
Guys, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for being here and giving me the opportunity to talk about the Clay Target team.
Thanks, Marty.
Once again, that's Marty Fisher, the head coach for the Georgia Southern Clay Target shooting team. A fantastic individual.
Yeah, for sure.
A really, really good advocate for Georgia Southern and what they do. Has been a lot of fun to follow. Again, we got to see it kind of, not firsthand, but we'll call it secondhand, with Doug and being able to follow it through him. And he's definitely kept us abreast of what's going on throughout the last couple of years or so. But really, really enjoyed talking to Marty, and a really fun program. If you're able to get involved, definitely do it. A really cool thing to be a part of.
He rivals Terry in true bluedness.
Oh, no doubt. Which is kind of funny because Terry's the one that introduced us to
Correct.
Get this together.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure surprises no one.
Nah, I met Marty for the first time the Thursday that I spoke at Kerry Hilliard's down in Savannah over the summer, and Marty and I, we probably talked for a half hour, 45 minutes just after the event was over with, and I think I learned more about clay shooting than I ever anticipated, but it was an easy conversation because of how much we've gotten to know and see Doug over these last couple of years with Georgia Southern Baseball.
Definitely a really fun interview to talk to Marty a little bit. But as we dive into this week in Georgia Southern Athletics, Georgia Southern Men's Golf currently at the Fighting Irish Classic up in South Bend. Taking a look at the scoreboard, almost finished for the day. Georgia Southern sitting 11th at over 14. They are on the final two holes of the day. They are 3 over for today as a whole. Washington leads the way with 10 under par. They are finishing up as well. But Georgia Southern 11th. As the team, taking a look at the individual leaderboard, Georgia Southern led by Ben Carr, who has jumped 6 spots today. He is in 12th as the team, as he finished 1 under for today. But Georgia Southern men's golf will be back in action, coming up to Johnson, Tennessee for the final tournament of the fall in the Bank of Tennessee Collegiate at the Blackthorn Golf Club next Saturday through Tuesday. That's one that I wish we could have hopped in the van for.
Well, as spaced out as those seats are, I don't know if they'd have room for us, because those guys travel in style. They travel
no
slick, but being any team that's coached by Carter Collins, you would expect that. But at the same time, I was trying to get the Steve Spurrier out of him last week at Hail Southern Live, and he said, well, Spurrier plays more golf than any of us combined. But that'd be a cool thing if they get to run into him. I doubt that they will, but hopefully get back safely from South Bend and then focus on going to Johnson City soon after that.
Georgia Southern Women's Golf will be at the Edesto Island Invitational Sunday through Tuesday as well, hosted by the College of Charleston at the Plantation Course at Edesto Island. I don't know why that is so difficult for me to say. That's 2 weeks in a row that I haven't been able to say Edesto.
All right, you want a quick story before we get Barry on?
Only always.
Okay, there were a couple of guys when I was doing the Charleston River Dogs in the South Atlantic League, not that played for the River Dogs, but you play Augusta, you play Savannah, there's naturally going to be some regional talent. And a couple of guys listed that as their hometown. I was so nervous that I was going to say it wrong. I would deliberately not say, well, they're from the coastal portion of South Carolina. I deliberately would not say it because I knew I would hear it from somebody, because I want to say that one of our, either our general managers or our vice presidents was from there. And whenever I would ask about it, they would just smile. They wouldn't tell me what the right answer was, and I was having trouble finding it. This is 13 years ago. But that's just something I've always been able to laugh about.
Georgia Southern women's soccer with a 2-1 victory over Troy on Thursday. Ellis Nemtsov and Marcella Montoya, both on penalty kicks, score for Georgia Southern. And then they had quite a week of travel going out to ULM.
Yeah, I saw
they were
this.
Supposed to fly out early on Saturday morning to get to ULM for the Sunday match. The bus driver that was supposed to pick them up from Statesboro was late, so they were late getting to Savannah to fly out. They missed their flight. Chris Adams, Chris Davis, both get on the phone. Kelly Tours provides the bus, but they didn't have a bus driver available on last-second notice to go to Monroe. So Roger Inman, who is the jack of all trades.
Who you know from Eagle Tales.
Correct.
And a lot of other things. Chili and chicken and right. Barbecue and all that.
He volunteers to drive them to ULM.
He did.
They get in at 9 p.m. They're not able to practice at ULM. And what do? Go out and win 2-0 against the Warhawks. Ellis Nemtsov again and Olivia Durham score for Georgia Southern. That's a heck of a story, and that might turn into an Eagle Tales in and of itself.
Cap that off with a clean sheet. That's pretty cool.
So they will continue Sunbelt play this week at home as Texas State coming in Friday, 6 p.m. the kickoff, and then Louisiana will come in on Sunday starting at noon. Men's soccer with a 1-0 tough loss against Stetson in double overtime last Tuesday evening. They will begin a new era as they open up MAC play this week. Thursday against Akron, who is receiving votes in the top 25. And then Saturday at number 17, Bowling Green. Both of those will be 7 p.m. kicks. Georgia Southern volleyball fell 3-1 to Coastal on Friday, but bounced back in a big-time way with a 3-1 victory over App State on Sunday. So they are 10-4. 3-1 in Sunbelt Conference play, off to a great start under head coach Chad Willis. They will have a split week as they face Georgia State twice, Thursday up in Atlanta, and then Saturday, 6 p.m. the first serve at home inside Hanner Fieldhouse. So we transition over to Georgia Southern football. Before we get to Barry McKnight, the voice of the Troy Trojans, again, one of our favorite guests that we have on throughout the year, got to go back to last week's victory over Arkansas State, and I will just kind of give you the floor on this one and let you just go.
I'll keep it simple because there's a lot that we could talk about, but whenever you rush for 503 yards, whenever you have four picks, first four turnovers, forced all year, you come up with six sacks and 12 tackles for loss, odds are you're going to win a football game. And it was even more special that it was in interim head coach Kevin Whitley's debut. The focus was on the field where it needed to be. You saw that when that occurred, just how well the team could play, and I think that they still could have played a lot better because Arkansas State actually outgained them because they had to throw the ball so much. They ended up changing quarterbacks in the fourth quarter. But it was one that, and again, I've said this before, I hate the phrase must win because they're all must win. You can't go into a matchup saying, oh, we don't need to win against Troy as much as you need to beat Arkansas or Coastal or App or anybody like that at Georgia State. But it was the that's more like it game. We thought we were going to get it against the Raging Cajuns. It ended that way as the defense really stepped up in the fourth quarter, only gave up 15 yards total. They only gave up one first down. Defense only missed two tackles the entire second half of that Cajun game. But you come in against an Arkansas State team that was, you know, they were going to throw the ball. You know that they were going to move the ball. They've had trouble giving up big play after big play. And when Georgia Southern started gashing them early, when Logan Wright started to go crazy, they never adjusted. They continued to play bump and run coverage, no safety help. So that means when you miss a run fit or you miss a tackle in the hole or you're not where you're supposed to be, it's going to go. And that's why Georgia Southern had nine carries that went for 20 yards or more. That's why Logan Wright ran for 214 yards on 10 carries.
We found out just the sixth time in the last 21 years that somebody has gone for over 200 in a game on 10 or fewer carries. Most by an Eagle since Jerick McKinnon had 316 against Central Arkansas back in the 2012 FCS playoffs. And it was really nice to see and be able to talk about a team that ran for 500, because it's happened so much in the history of the program, but not since that 2015 season when you had a Matt Breida and L.A. Ramsby, a Wesley Fields. But now that you've got that, I don't think it's reasonable to expect it every week, but yeah, you can now see what the capability is. It's a much different challenge this week against a Troy team that's 20th in the country, stopping the run, about 97 yards per game. They're fifth nationally in total defense. They probably should have beaten South Carolina last week. They had a couple of really questionable calls go the way of the SEC team, which, imagine that. But I suspect that this is going to be a very challenging game for both and probably going to be low scoring.
Troy will come in with a 2-3 record, 0-1 in Sunbelt Conference play. And to preview the Trojans of Troy, we welcome in the voice of the Troy Trojans in Barry McKnight. Barry, appreciate you joining us.
Oh, absolutely. Learning a lot about Georgia Southern and watching two pros at work. It's artistry, fellas.
Yeah, you're the pro on the right side of that screen.
I've missed your voice so much.
Take us into what this Troy program is kind of at right now. We mentioned 2-3 on the season. Danny just talked about it. A game that you felt like you were in the entire time, probably should have beaten the South Carolina Gamecocks. What is the kind of mindset for this team right now?
Well, the mindset is full of questions. You know, hopefully, you would hope with all the people that Troy had back that five games in, you would find out, you would know more about your team than really Troy does right now. So I'll start by telling you what we know. And Colin, you touched on it. The defensive numbers are off the charts. This defense has been generational. And, you know, you guys know and expect good defense there. Same thing here. We've had some terrific defenses, and I'm not sure I've seen a defense, you know, front to back that is as fast, as deep as this Troy team. And I've seen some really good defenses. It has been everything that we had hoped it would be and more. Offensively is where the questions are. And I still think that the season to this point has come down to the offense with the inability to rush the football. And it sounds elemental, but it was something that Troy absolutely was committed to do before the start of the season. You guys know the names. Kamani Vidal was back and loved that kid. And B.J. Smith has been there. Now this is his sixth year, and he was a preseason conference offensive player of the year before he got hurt. And the offensive line, not only was everybody back on the O-line, but everybody was back on the first two deep on the O-line. And it just has not happened in the run game. And I don't have any answers as to why that hasn't happened. The offensive line hasn't gotten as much of a push as they had wanted to. Consistently ran the ball better against South Carolina, but you know, so much of what Chip Lindsey does on offense is predicated around handling the line of scrimmage and establishing a rushing attack and playing fast, and all of that has been below par, to be honest with you, to this point, and the offense has really suffered because of it.
The thing that really sticks out for me offensively, and look, we could talk all day about Kamani, about BJ, about DK Billingsley, who I know is fourth in the depth chart, but just crushed Georgia Southern 2 years ago in that 600-plus yard performance down at the Vet 2 years ago. But Tez Johnson has already surpassed what he did all of last year out of the slot. He had a big catch against the Eagles here last year. How has he become such an important part of this offense?
Well, the biggest reason why, besides his obvious talent, he is a great kid. His program weight is 160. I'm thinking he's more like 153, 155, something like that.
You sound very like you've quick. Weighed him personally.
Well, he is. He's told me this last year. It's an interesting story, by the way. You know, we had a feature interview with him. Bo Nix is his brother. His adopted father is Patrick Nix and Kristen Nix. And, you know, he played at Pinson Valley High School with Bo. He's from Pinson and they're adoptive brothers. And I kind of explored that a little bit. And, you know, you see Tez in street clothes and you think he's just a regular student. And I asked him last year how much he was weighing. And he says, I'm 160. And, you know, you give him the cocked eyebrow and he says, oh, 153, something like that. But to answer your question, Danny, and it's a good question because his numbers are good. He's a slot receiver and he is really good at getting separation in traffic, part of it because he's so small, part of it because he's really fast. But the biggest reason why is because everybody is double-teaming Reggie Todd on the outside. So there's going to be some space. And it's been difficult for Reggie. He is a pro prospect. He's 6'5", 215, you know, good catch radius, real good hands, real good speed. He may be the best pro prospect on the team, but everybody's double-teaming Reggie Todd on the outside. And then that frees up, you know, some slot receivers. We got another young receiver named Jabri Barber who has really come on in the last couple of games since the Southern Miss game. But there needs to be somebody else on the outside, Barber and Johnson are slot receivers, to kind of help take some of the pressure off of Reggie and draw some of those double teams away. But Tess has taken advantage of the opportunities that he has had in the slot with a little bit of extra acreage over on his side of the field.
Take us into Taylor Powell and what he has meant to this team, transferring in from Missouri after last year. What is the biggest thing that he has brought to this offense?
Well, he gets us into the right place. When he has got absolute latitude to change a play at the line of scrimmage, Gunner did last year, but Taylor's a little bit better at it, to be honest with you. And he sees the field so well. He is an absolute nut for preparation. Our center, Dylan Bradshaw, says he's the most prepared man he's ever met. And I asked him, have you ever met Danny Reed? But you get...
I have not met Dylan Bradshaw.
All right. But so hence he feels confidence in that statement. You know, he's all the time in the film room. Taylor mainlines about 5 cups of coffee a day, and he's always in there. He also, physically speaking, he's a little bit better than Gunner at keeping the pocket moving, you know, extending a play. His feet are a little bit better. His sense of the pressure around him is a little bit better. Now, he's hurt. He almost didn't play against South Carolina, had a heavily wrapped left knee. And when he threw that pick 6, he might have been able to make a play on that guy, but he just couldn't run. And he couldn't move as well in the pocket. And they really kind of teed off on him late in the game. But he's a tough kid. But the main thing for him is that he has really been good for us this year at making sure you get into the right play and making sure you get it to the right person in space. If there's a drawback to him so far, he's been a little bit gun shy about getting the ball downfield.
Yeah.
You know, we have not really been able to take the top off the defense against anybody consistently. Most of Tez's catches have come underneath with, you know, yards after the catch. Reggie has been really good at 50-50 balls downfield, but in terms of just a big, strong, fast receiver getting downfield and just lobbing it over the defense, that hasn't happened at all this year for Troy.
All right, you and I have talked before about this guy, and I've said it before on broadcasts, on coaches' shows, on podcasts. My favorite opposing player in this league, without question, is Carlton Marshall. I think I've told you that literally. I love the way that he plays, and somebody who's a former walk-on to lead the country in tackles and to basically be somebody that nobody can figure out how to block. Being around him these last few years, what else is there that Eagle Nation should know in advance of watching this one Saturday night?
Yeah, I got to go along with you. He's my favorite player in the league and has been for a couple of years and easily one of my top 2 or 3 young people in any sport at Troy. He just graduated with a degree in sports broadcasting, and we can, you know, try to talk him out of that, you know, tough times ahead and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But he's really good at it. And he's, I told him the other day, we had a feature with him last week. He's the happiest guy on campus, never has a bad day. His value to the team, Danny, you alluded to it, he's averaging 9 tackles a game for his entire career. Nobody else in active right now in NCAA football is averaging that. But, you know, he's very quick. He's very quick decision-making. He's like Taylor Powell in that he's got a great football IQ, best I've ever seen here defensively. And when he gets to the ball, he gets there quick. But the other value he brings to the team is what Taylor brings to the offense. He makes everybody around him better. He gets the defense into the proper sets all the time. There's very rarely a gap issue or a assignment issue among the front 7 because of Carlton Marshall. He is maybe the smartest defensive football player that I've ever seen in the Sun Belt Conference.
Carlton Marshall has got to be a spotter's dream. Whenever there's any doubt, I'm just going to point to him.
Yeah, right in the middle. Just there's no scanning the board. It's right there. That one. He's had something to do with it.
On the other side of things, it's a bit of a nightmare because you try to think of different words and different verbiage to say Carlton Marshall makes the tackle because that happens 10 times a game, and you can't just say Marshall on the tackle 10 different times because I guarantee you, he's going to be on the tackle 10 different times. It's a challenge to try to find different ways to describe that.
See, I would have figured that either Jerry or Bob or Brent would have gotten you the thesaurus by now.
Well, you know, we're looking at flashcards, trying to find that next time, just so I'm ready, you know. We're looking for some of those. Makes the tackle, puts a hat on him, puts a stomper on him, bulldogs him down, corkscrews him down, all that stuff. I've used it all ad infinitum on Carlton Marshall, I promise you.
First time we've ever heard ad infinitum on a podcast.
Well, if there's anybody that we have on, it's going to be Barry.
It's got to be.
Jay Walker's
not
throwing that out there.
There's not a lot of Latin going on here, fellas. Come on.
When you look up front for this Troy defense, we've talked about Will Cholo the last couple of years, but Solomon is really a guy that has kind of taken that bandit position, kind of the hybrid of what you're going to see on Saturday. 10.5 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks already. What is it about what he has brought to this team as a redshirt freshman?
Well, two things, Colin, and I think they both go hand in hand in terms of his effectiveness. That bandit position for Troy, the scheme of it is basically the same as the anchor position at Georgia. It's the same thing, just called differently. Troy's had some great ones, you know, Tyler Roberts and Hunter Reese and Rashad Dillard, who was the defensive player of the year in the league a few years ago. All of those are bandits. It's a hybrid deal where you've got to be able to rush the passer, but you've also got to be able to cover every once in a while. And he's got the feet to do that. Two things about him. Number one, he works. They use him and Richard Gibbonor, the Auburn transfer, perfectly together. They're best friends. They're together all the time. I see him in the hotel together all the time. They basically share snaps. Share series, and they complement each other well. Gibbonor is an athletic freak, but the thing that Jamon has over him just a little bit more experience in football. Richard's only been playing organized football for about 4 years. And the other thing is he's got a phenomenal first step. You put him one-on-one with a tackle, and I can't tell you the number of times a tackle has jumped ahead of time trying to get back into position to account for that first step. His first step is as good as I've ever seen. He's long. He's got long arms, but he's got great lean. He gets down on that turn really, really well. And when he's coming, there's no mistaking about it. It's 100% every time. He plays full blast.
Overall for this Troy team, when you look at what it's been able to do this year, what's the biggest surprise that you've seen so far?
The biggest negative surprise is the inability to run the football, because I would have put my bottom dollar on the fact that that would be the big thing. Coach Lindsey told us that during the summer. You're going to like the way we run the football. So that's been a surprise. That's been a surprise negatively. The biggest surprise, I think, positively, the thing that I think heartens me more than anything else about the chances for this team has been the way the defense has played. I remember a couple of years ago in 2019 when we struggled so much. I think we started 22 different guys on defense. The depth on defense has been really good, especially in the second. Well, the secondary has played well. The front seven is the key to the defense, and the defense is the key to the team. But the secondary has been so good. The cornerbacks, Reddy Steward, who, you know, has really come into his own. And there's another cornerback on the other side. He's a second-year freshman, a transfer from Austin Peay named Elijah Culp. And he has been terrific in man-on-man coverage. So our cornerbacks have been a pleasant surprise, and I really like our safeties. Del Pettis has been there forever. He had the pick six last year in Statesboro, and he's just steady good all the time. But the cornerbacks, the way that they have come on despite losing Terrence Dunlap, has been a really positive surprise to help the defense out.
Your special teams always seem to be at least better than average, if not the best in the league. But new punter this year with Magliozzi, the UConn transfer, new kicker in Buse, the Georgia transfer. But my man Cameron Kay, fifth year as a starter, as the log snapper, got a fumble recovery against South Carolina. That's got to be the dream for somebody that's been there that long.
Yeah, we have a little catchphrase, you know, because he snaps for punts and kicks and has been doing that forever. Every kick begins with K.
of that one.
But the last week the kick ended with Kay. We never had a chance to say that before with the fumble recovery. Another great kid. This is one of the things that's a joy. And I know you've got favorites, Danny. I know you've got favorites, Colin. But this year's team, it's full of great personalities, great stories. You guys, you know, tell stories all the time, and it's valuable in the broadcast, but some really good people to be around. And Cameron Kay is one of them. I love that guy. He is a long snapper. He's never going to be a starting offensive lineman. He's never going to be a starting defensive lineman or get his name in the box scores or anything. But he's been doing it for 6 years. He's got a master's degree. He very likely will long snap in the NFL. And he's like Carlton Marshall. If those two aren't the happiest guys on campus, I'd like to meet the guys who are.
We've been friends ever since Georgia Southern joined the league. And it's something that I've always said I was going to ask you, but never have. And we're going to kind of go off path here a little bit, but
all right.
It's a podcast.
This is not disconcerting at all.
I don't even know what he's going to ask, no. So this is news to me.
So your touchdown call is touchdown Men of Troy. You've mm-hmm. got the license plate and all. Where did the call of touchdown Men of Troy come from?
Well, you know, Danny and I have gotten into deep conversations about sports broadcasting. I'm serious.
This is my Valentine's Day from 3 years ago, by the way.
Your Valentine's Day 3 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, at the Asian restaurant right across the street from campus over there. Yeah. Danny knows I hate spicy food, so he made sure that they loaded me up.
The cayenne was...
Wow, yeah. That's what I remember. But through my tears, we had a conversation about the structure of sportscasting, what you do, what you like to have and all that. And I've always believed, and Danny's been a baseball broadcaster for a long time. I've worked in minor league baseball. What you want it to is for something like that, if you're going to have a catchphrase, for it to be organic. I don't believe you should script anything. Well, I'll never forget the first time I did it. It was top of my head, like so many great, you know, like so many enduring calls are. I did touchdown Men of Troy, and you say it exuberantly, and you add something to it, and it resonated with the fans. I got texts about that. Jerry liked it. My mom liked it, and of course, you know. She likes everything I say, but it's
but she really liked that.
It becomes something you think, well, maybe this is a thing. And nowadays, the two things I've noticed, number one is that fans come to expect it. It's an exuberant thing, and fans get in on it as well. It is a catchphrase for the fans as well and the people online and social media and all that. But the second thing about it is that fans always want me to say it out of context, away from the football field. Hey, Barry, can you give us a big touchdown Men of Troy? Don't ever do that. I'll never do that. You know, and I'll explain to him, look, I'm saving those. You don't want to do that. People have asked me to do that for their ringtone and stuff like that. And that's not the context I want it to be in. But yeah, Danny and I have talked about stuff like that. Anytime you do something like that, I'm against scripting it. It was all just organic and all. And it caught on, and it's become associated with me now for 20 years.
All right, everybody has heard us. Yeah, that's fantastic.
That's pretty good.
Everybody's heard us talk about Mossy Grove Schoolhouse. Mm-hmm. And talked about the different places in Troy. What is your go-to place for Eagle fans coming to Troy this weekend for Georgia Southern and the Trojans?
Well, there's a couple of places. Of course, Mossy Grove is good, and you guys know Sylvia at Mossy Grove.
That's
and if
girl.
You don't know Sylvia, you will soon hear Sylvia when you when you go into Mossy Grove. She is she is an institution.
Firecracker.
Or belongs in one of those. Yeah, and great place for steaks and all of that. I love that place. Now there is another place, and I believe me, ever since 2 years ago, I have been trying to find a Japanese restaurant that has extra cayenne pepper waiting for Danny to come down. There is not that so far, but there is a place, and I know Troy's a rural town. There's a place that is attached to a gas station in Troy. It's called Preston's, and they've got something called the Kaylee Tater. You got to get the Kaylee Tater, fellas. But the thing to remember about the Kaylee, it's a loaded potato with steak tips, and it's got mushrooms and everything. The thing for you guys to remember is to keep the Kaylee Tater away from Terry if you're in a closed vehicle on the drive back. I'm just telling you. Thank me later for that, okay? But it's really good, and there's not a great selection in Troy, but I would go probably Mossy Grove first for the ambiance and the steaks, and Preston's just to be able to tell somebody that you ate at a gas station in Troy, Alabama.
That's fantastic. Barry, really appreciate the time. Can't wait to catch up with you this weekend, and have a great call this weekend.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, fellas. I think Danny hit it right. You know, earlier in his comments, you don't want to say something like this is a must win, but it is really a big win for Troy. It is something that Troy would dearly love to have and dearly needs, and going to give it everything we got Saturday evening for sure.
Thanks, Barry.
Thanks, Barry.
Take care.
Oh, Barry McKnight. There is nobody like that man.
Oh, I don't know what I was expecting, but that was even better than what I was expecting. He is a treasure.
He's a fantastic, as good as he is as a broadcaster, and been a fantastic friend to us ever since we joined the league. He was one of the first people that we met when we joined the league. But he is that much of a good broadcaster, times about 75, that good of a person.
He won with every kick begins with K. Never added ends with K. I never would have even, because I guarantee you, that is one that he just came up with, and Jerry probably looked at me, are you kidding me? He probably just looked at him. Bob's just sitting there spotted. That's awesome. Brett walks in. Did you just say every kick begins with K, Barry?
Oh, man. I love that, man. Fantastic, dude.
Let's just play them every week.
Yeah,
we'll just rotate.
Kidding.
We'll go to Preston's thing and come here.
Wow. But
taking a look at this Troy team, and there's not much to cover that Barry hasn't already said and said so eloquently, but
ad infinitum is one.
Nope. No doubt. That's the, you don't even have to go back and check the replay of that one. That is the first time that has ever been said on Inside Eagle Nation.
Well,
I can tell you that.
I got Hail Southern Live last week when Carter Collins is talking about undulating greens, and I guarantee you we've never said undulating before.
There's not something that we have to go back and check.
I don't know where this is all coming from, but I guess it's raising our IQs a little bit.
I'd hope so.
Yeah.
We've talked about it so much over the last couple of years, how good Carlton Marshall is.
He's
and
fantastic.
We talk about it so much. He is our favorite Sun Belt Conference player that doesn't wear blue and white.
Yeah.
And he is just, it seems like every year we're like, okay, he can't get any better. And then he does. And again, he's taking that next step, which I didn't think was possible after you led the country in tackles last year.
His tackles are a little bit down, but he's still third in the league. He's been playing hurt, though. So you can understand it. He's had a foot issue for a couple of weeks. He still impacted the game against South Carolina last week, even though it was in a loss. There were certain things that Troy did that you have to do against a Power 5 school, and they should know because they've beaten LSU, they've beaten Nebraska, they've beaten Mississippi State. They know how to beat Power 5 schools. You have to be good on third down. They were 7-14. You have to run the ball. They outrushed South Carolina. You have to force turnovers. They forced three of them. But they gave it away four times, as Barry mentioned. One of those was a pick six. And it was at the end of the first half. They were on their way in. It was a 10-7 game. It became 17-7. You had a couple of bizarre plays where there was a strip sack that South Carolina should have got a touchdown off of. Guy dropped the ball before the goal line and ended up being a touchback, gave the ball right back to Troy. They had a strip sack from Gibbonor in Gamecock territory that if they would have gone down and gotten a touchdown, they would have taken the lead. But Reggie Todd, unfortunately, gave it back. And that was one of the calls where Jabri Barber, for them, looked like he had the ball recovered. But for whatever reason, the recovery was given to South Carolina. And I've gone back. I've seen it from multiple angles on the SEC network. I don't know how Troy didn't get the ball back. But even so, from that point on, South Carolina held the ball for 6 minutes or so. They ended up getting the decisive field goal. Powell threw an interception next drive, and even him. I watched two games of them today. I watched him against South Carolina, of course, but I also watched two games ago against Liberty, a game that they were in and could have won if they would have had the ball more. He was healthy against Liberty. He could drive off that left knee, had some touch, had some arm strength,
Liberty opted to single cover Reggie Todd. Never a good idea for reasons that Barry mentioned, being 6'5", and that's what scares me about this matchup, is Reggie Todd if Georgia Southern doesn't find a way to stack coverage against him. But also, he can run a little bit, and by that, he's capable. He's not your Justin Tomlin where he is true dual threat. But with that knee, he was unable to run down David Spalding. That name may sound familiar because he was here last year, transferred to South Carolina. Things have worked out for him. He had the angle if he would have been healthy. But he knows one wrong step with that knee, maybe he doesn't play again this year.
One other thing that I wanted to bring up before we wrap up the preview of Georgia Southern and Troy is a tweet that you sent out earlier this morning. You had a fantastic throwback, and I know it's not Thursday yet, but
I'll give credit to where credit is due, but go ahead.
A 1938 promo picture before the clash between Troy State and Georgia Southern Teachers College when the Red Wave beat the Blue Tide. That's just too many water things. 7-0.
See, this is my guy, Ben Whitehead, who writes for the Trojan Wall. He's outstanding at covering Troy from a fan's perspective, writes for the Trojan Wall website, and that's actually where that picture comes from because he was doing a full analysis of the home facilities where Troy football is played at. And we know from going there for baseball that Riddle Pace Field used to be Pace Field. That used to be the football field before it moved just across the way behind their hitting facility, behind their clubhouse to Veterans Memorial Stadium, where it's been for going on 80 years now, and it's one of the more scenic setups, not just in this league, but I would put it up against very many in the Group of Five. But seeing that picture, I talked with Ben a few weeks back, and it was, okay, if I get a chance to use this, I'm going to credit you for it. But also, if we could ever get an instance where Troy and Georgia Southern would agree to both wear alternate uniforms for one game.
Awesome.
Red Wave, Blue Tide, it just seems, because you could take the uniforms, the Georgia Teachers College uniforms that Georgia Southern wore about a decade ago. So you could wear those and get Troy and Bren Jones to figure out the Red Wave, but if you could get both to agree at the same time to wear alternates, and it doesn't matter if it's here or there, but that photo is one I've been hanging on to, and
you've been hiding this from me?
Well, it's been for a while, and I almost forgot I had it, but I saw Ben actually put out a tweet. And
you would have been so mad if you got to next week and said, crap, I had it.
Well, that's the thing, because Ben put out the tweet and said, this is my long-standing deal, GS Eagles voice, and I want to see Red Wave versus Blue Tide. I said, oh, crap, I got that picture. I got to be able to put it up. But, yeah, that's back from 1938. The game was in Troy, and that's actually a Troy promotional picture. They won that game 7-0, and this history, it goes all the way back to 34. Now, yeah. I know that's before Georgia Southern's modern era, but these two have clashed in the Tracy Ham era. Georgia Southern went to Troy. That's when they were Division II and winning national championships there with Ray Rhodes, and that was a close victory for the Eagles in the Wiregrass. Last two times that Georgia Southern has been there, has not gone very well. Lost 38-16 and 17, 49-28 2 years ago. That's the game we mentioned with Barry where Troy had over 600 yards of offense. They were at almost 400 yards total by halftime.
Yeah.
They threw. They did whatever they wanted to. They had 9 sacks on defense. They're very fast with their front 7. They're extremely quick. But while Georgia Southern spent a few years banging its head off the option wall trying to get the edge, what they did last year to rush for over 320, they went right at him. Dive, 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 dive. Gerald Green popped the long run, which swung the momentum. And that was the first time probably since 2016 that the Eagles were able to consistently run the ball on a Troy defense.
And I was thinking about it earlier today. I don't know that there are two more polar opposite defenses that Georgia Southern could go up against between what we saw this past week against Arkansas State and Troy. And that's not throwing shade by any stretch of the imagination on Arkansas State. Everybody in that program would tell you that they have not been tackling very well by any means.
That's why they lost the game.
Right.
They didn't tackle. That's it.
And this has been a Troy defense that has been one of the better tackling teams the last couple of years. It's very rare that you see Troy just straight up miss a tackle. or somebody fight through a Troy tackle.
And you got the stat from KJ Robertson. This is a great one that Adam Prendergast, their SID, pulled out. He missed two tackles all last year.
Right.
A linebacker who's involved on almost every play misses two tackles all season.
And so
it's crazy.
It's two polar opposite defenses, but it's a much taller task for Georgia Southern this week going up against this Troy defense that we have talked about a lot over the last couple of years. But it'll be a 7 o'clock Eastern kickoff, 6 o'clock local. I'm getting this. It only took 17
No,
years.
You have it now.
7 o'clock.
I've taught you all I can teach you. He's finally mastered it.
Oh, that's not even close to right. 7 o'clock Eastern kick. We'll be on the air with the Cutwater Tailgate Show starting at 5 o'clock from Veterans Memorial Stadium.
It used to be Trojan Field. That was one of the iterations.
I just saw it in the promo, and that's what made me... Never mind.
Back in 1938 where they played at Trojan Field. They don't know exactly where it was located, but Trojan Field was one of the... They had Pace Field.
We should go on a scavenger hunt.
I think one of the ones they played at the fairgrounds off of 231, which is one of the roads you can take. I mean, there's about 100 ways you can go if you're going from here to there. But for people in Atlanta, Terry talked about this against Arkansas State. It's about a two-hour trip. If you're going at a down angle towards southeast Alabama, you'll hit up 96 eventually. We went through Lumpkin last time. Stopped at a...
Yeah. I know we always go through Phoenix City because I have to wave at my friends.
Yes. Stop by and see Glenwood High School. Hello, Mr. Hello, Mr. Tim.
Hello, Coach Fanning.
We stopped at our four-way barbecue in Lumpkin. We went through went through Sly County, went through Montezuma.
Yep.
That was a different way. Frank took me on the way back 2 years ago. We went through Donaldsonville and way down southwest Georgia. Where
way
his,
down south.
Well, that's where his in-laws, the Georgia Gold, where he did the Southern Roots story, the alcohol drink that he had been producing for a number of years. That's when an armadillo ran through his cotton field. He took out a shotgun and said, I'm going at this. So that was interesting. That's how my Sunday after Troy went. So Troy gets 600 yards against the Eagles on the way home. I watched an armadillo almost get shot by a shotgun in Miller County.
That's fantastic.
That's how that weekend went.
That's an amazing story. Again, 7 o'clock Eastern kickoff for Georgia Southern and Troy on Saturday. We're on the air at 5 o'clock with the Cutwater Tailgate Show. It'll be 6 o'clock local kickoff from Veterans Memorial Stadium. Until this weekend, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.